Order. Cheryl, please call the roll.
Chair McClure? I mean, Chair Leak?
Get ahead of yourself there, Cheryl. Here.
Vice Chair McClure? Committee Whip Mooney?
Here.
Ranking Member Driscoll? Representatives Altman?
Here.
Andrade?
Here.
Bell?
Here.
Benjamin? Brannon?
Here.
Posada Cabrera? Cheney? Daley?
Here.
Fine?
Here.
Garrison? Gottlieb?
Here.
Grant?
Here.
Gregory?
Here.
Hunchowski?
Here.
Masullo?
Here.
Payne?
Here.
Perez? Rommel?
Here.
Sosman? Schoaf? Silvers?
Here.
Skidmore?
Here.
Stevenson?
Here.
Tomco? Williams? You have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
A quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone to the Appropriations Committee. Please make sure that cell phones and other communication devices are turned off or on silent mode. Today, we have 15 bills on the agenda. We're going to start by paring that down by one. So please show House Bill 843, temporarily postponed. First, we're going to take up committee substitute for House Bill 217 by Representative Mooney. Representative Mooney, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, and Committee. HB 217 allows the College of Florida Keys is the only state college allowed by law to construct and operate student dorms because of the lack of affordable housing for the college's students. The bill allows the college to use grant funds and capital improvement fee revenues to construct and operate these dorms, allowing the college to have an ownership interest in the building and be more responsive to the student tenants' needs. The bill also authorizes an additional 25 beds to be used as affordable housing for college employees, K-12 educators, first responders, and healthcare workers, which ultimately would be 50 extra rooms on that. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. There is one strike all amendment. Representative Mooney, would you explain the amendment?
Thank you, Chair. The amendment maintains the goals of the underlying bill while also clarifying which fund sources may be used and the responsibilities of the Division of Bond Finance, and that is the amendment.
Thank you. Are there questions on the amendment? Any questions on the amendment? Is there any public testimony on the amendment? Yep. Not on the amendment, so we're in debate. Is there any debate on the amendment? Seeing no debate on the amendment, Representative Mooney, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
Wave close.
Thank you. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying yay.
Yay.
All those opposed, no. Show the amendment adopted. We're now back on the bill. Are there any questions on the bill as amended? Seeing no questions on the bill as amended, is there any public testimony on the bill as amended? We have Megan Fay for the Florida Keys Educational Foundation waves in support. Seeing no further public testimony, is there debate on the bill as amended? Seeing no debate on the bill as amended, Representative Mooney, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Chair. Wave close.
Thank you. Cheryl, please call the roll.
Chair Leak?
Yes.
Vice Chair McClure?
Yes.
Committee Whip Mooney?
Yes.
Ranking Member Driscoll?
Yes.
Representatives Altman?
Yeah, yes.
Andrade? Bell?
Yes.
Benjamin? Brannon?
Yes.
Posada Cabrera?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Daley?
Yes.
Fine? Garrison?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Hunchowski?
Yes.
Masullo?
Yes.
Payne?
Yes.
Perez?
Yes.
Rommel?
Yes.
Sosman? Schoaf?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tomco?
Yes.
Williams?
Thank you. By your vote, show the bill passes. Next, we will take up CS for HB 185 by Representative Tribolsi. Representative Tribolsi, you're recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Thank you, members. House Bill 185 revises statutory provisions related to dependent children, including the mandatory appointment of a guardian ad litem in every case until case closure and the assignment of a guardian ad litem attorney for every child. Specifically, the bill amends multiple sections of Chapter 39 to make changes to current law related to the role and operation of the guardian ad litem office. It codifies that all guardian ad litems are fiduciaries that must provide independent legal representation to each child, requires the guardian ad litem office to develop a training program for attorney ad litems, makes changes to provisions related to nonprofit entities, makes changes to provisions relating to representation for children in the child welfare system who have specific special needs. It also directs the guardian ad litem office to identify at least one supportive adult that the youth believes will be a lifelong connection and document it in the youth's court file. Finally, the bill codifies provisions related to Pathways to Prosperity program, which is part of the Hope Florida initiative. And Mr. Chair, this bill has two substantial amendments.
Thank you. Let's first see if there are any questions on the bill. We do have two substantial amendments, so I'm going to be, you want to wait till it's amended and then ask a question? Okay, great. All right, thank you. Please explain the First Amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The First Amendment removes the proposed changes from lines 504 to 638 relating to the appointment of an attorney ad litem. It also removes the changes related to representation for children with special needs and restores those provisions to current law. Lastly, it makes technical changes to the name of the statewide guardian ad litem office. And that is the amendment.
Thank you, members. And for clarity, that was amendment number one, barcode 304913. Are there questions on the amendment? Representative Driscoll for a question on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Rep. Could you explain then what really would be left over in the bill with this amendment? And I know we have another amendment to get through, but I'm just trying to understand what the practical impact of the amendment is.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this bill has given a lot of people a lot of heartburn for 2 years. As I presented initially, that is what is in the meat of the bill, and I'm happy to just briefly go over that again if you'd like. Sure. So it codifies that all guardian ad litems are fiduciaries and must provide independent legal representation. It requires the guardian ad litem office to develop a training program for attorney ad litems. It makes changes to provisions related to nonprofit entities. It makes changes to, which will be in the Second Amendment, makes changes to provisions relating to representation for children in the child welfare system. It also directs the guardian ad litem office to identify at least one supportive adult that the youth believes will be a lifelong connection. It codifies provisions related to the Pathways to Prosperity program. Yes.
Any further questions on the amendment? Any further questions on the amendment? Seeing no further questions on the amendment. Public testimony on the amendment. Thank you. We have, looks like Dennis Moore.
Waves in support.
Waves in support. Thank you. Cheryl Satter, proponent, waves in support. Thank you. Seeing no further public testimony on the amendment, is there debate on the amendment? Seeing no debate on the amendment, Representative Trabulsi, you're recognized to close on your amendment number one.
Wait, close.
All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying yay.
Yay.
All those opposed, no. Boy, that barely squeaked out there. Show the amendment adopted. Representative Trabulsi, you are recognized to explain amendment number two, barcode 444073.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment removes lines 1941 through 2075 and makes the proposed change to the grant program by renaming it Fostering Prosperity. It also removes changes to the DSOs, the Direct Support Organization, and restores it to current law. That is the amendment.
Thank you. Are there questions on the amendment? Any questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions on the amendment, is there public testimony on the amendment? Dennis Moore waves in support. Seeing no further public testimony on the amendment, is there debate on the amendment? Seeing no further debate on the amendment, Representative Trabulsi, you're recognized to close on your amendment number two.
Wait, close.
All those in favor signify by saying yay.
Yay.
Yay. All those opposed, no. Show the amendment adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. Is there Well, I'm going to go back to questions. Are there any questions on the bill as amended? Representative Gottlieb.
Thank you, Chair. Representative, my concern, I guess, you know, from a fiscal standpoint is, as I understand it, the guardian ad litem has received numerous increases in funding over the years, but has only increased the number of their caseload by 13%. Yet at the same point in time, the ratio is one GAL to 142 children, whereas in Broward County, where I'm from, and Palm Beach County, where they use an attorney ad litem, the ratio is 1 to 35. So I want to know, does this, how can, for those two counties in particular, if you can explain how this makes good fiscal policy sense when their representation from the attorney ad litem is simply money drawn down from the federal government and not from the state.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not sure if this is going to answer your question, but by the two amendments that we just passed, it removes the fiscal entirely to this bill.
Representative Gottlieb.
If you can explain that to me, when you say it removes the fiscal, I'm not sure I follow.
Means it's not going to cost any money.
Well, right, I understand that, but my understanding was that the money that was federal money being drawn down from the federal government anyhow, and that there was no expense. So I'm trying to understand how removing a fiscal that didn't exist in the first place is happening.
Representative Tribolsi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last year, we didn't have a fiscal to this bill whatsoever. This year, we did have a fiscal of over $10 million that would have been appropriated to actually provide for more attorney ad litems, not guardian ad litems. Again, this bill's had a lot of heartburn along the way. We haven't been able to really come to a good place with the stakeholders. Although there are some still good policy within it, we felt by removing those particular pieces of the bill, maybe save them for another day or not, it would remove the fiscal. And of course, there was never an intent to fund the attorney ad litems any further.
Representative Gottlieb.
Thank you. So, thank you, Chair. So without the fiscal, who is going to, if the shift in coverage goes from an attorney ad litem in Broward to a guardian ad litem, who's going to pay for those services?
Representative Tribolsi.
There will be no shift. Every child will get a guardian ad litem attorney. That is codified in law. And guardian ad litem attorneys are actually representing over 90% of children in dependency right now. But because of the amendments, especially under that registry, which is what most of the attorney ad litems in your area are who they are representing, nothing will change because of the amendments.
Thank you. Any further questions on the bill as amended? Any further questions on the bill as amended? Seeing no further questions, is there testimony? Aaron Collins waves in support. Barney Bishop waves in support. John Walsh is an opponent. Looks like he's an opponent. Maybe waving in support, Mr. Walsh, if you could clarify. You're recognized, Mr. Walsh.
In light of the amendments that address three of our major concerns, I won't be speaking to you very long today, but there are some issues still in the bill that we'll be looking at, but we really do appreciate Representative Tribolsi working with us on this and amending the bill as she has. So thank you very much.
Do you support or oppose it? You get to choose one.
I can't give you my support right now. There's still some issues that we need to work on role confusion between us and the guardian ad litem, but I think we can get there for sure. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Cheryl Sattler waves in support. Seeing no further public testimony, is there debate? Representative Gottlieb, in debate.
So now I'm really confused given the explanation. what I'm going to do is I'm going to vote up on it today, I think, because, you know, I know it's going to pass. But if there's any additional changes that can be done before it hits the floor, I'd like to talk to you so that Broward and Palm Beach aren't adversely affected as they think they still might be. Okay? Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Representative Daly, in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be brief at the Vice Chair's insistence. Representative, thank you very much for your willingness to work with the stakeholders and everybody in this group. In light of the amendments today, I'll be up and appreciate your willingness to do so.
Any further debate? Any further debate? Seeing no further debate, Representative Trabolsi, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you, Chair Leak. Members, thank you so much for hearing this bill again. Last year, this bill went all the way through the House and passed on the floor, but it passed with a certain condition because we knew that it wasn't going to pass on the Senate side. And that condition was to work over the summer with the stakeholders to really try to come to a good medium ground where we felt we were doing good by the children in dependency in the state of Florida. Representative Benjamin, we had several conversations. We met in the bubble before the final vote last year, and I promised you that I would not pass a bill that would not be good and have a negative effect on children. By removing the language that we did in these two amendments, I think we are a lot closer. I think we're doing a great job getting there. In my opinion, we've taken a lot of the meat out of it, but it's not about me, it's about kids. So if you have any further questions or changes that you want to see clarification along the way, happy to talk to you and see what we can do without a close.
Thank you. Representative Trabolsi, having closed on her bill, we'll now proceed to vote. Chair, will you please call the roll?
Chair Leak?
Yes.
Committee Whip Mooney? Ranking Member Driscoll?
Yes.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Andrade? Bale?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Posada Cabrera?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Daley?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Hunchowski?
Yes.
Masullo?
Yes.
Payne?
Yes.
Perez? Rommel?
Yes.
Sosman? Schoaf? Silvers?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Williams? Vice Chair McClure?
Yes.
Thank you. By your vote, the bill passes. We're going to move next to Committee Substitute for House Bill 1473. Representative Trabolsi, you're recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Chair Leak, for hearing this bill today. And members, in 2018, the Parkland shooting devastated the families of 14 students and three staff members. In response, the Florida legislature created a commission to monitor the implementation of school safety legislation. This bill codifies into law many of the current best practices, including keeping access points closed and locked during school hours, and that all instructional areas be clearly marked with the safest area during an emergency. The bill updates current inspection and reporting requirements by the office and by the district. It allows for the identity of the school safe officer to be kept out of public record, requires the annual integration of the mobile suspicious activity reporting tool, and prohibits the use of drones over a school without written permission or the discretion of law enforcement. And House Bill 5001, $3.8 million in recurring general revenue funds is included for the bonuses to be provided by the Office of Safe Schools and DOE. Additionally, staff support has been provided to DOT, and that is the bill.
Thank you.
DOE, I'm sorry.
Thank you. Are there any questions of the sponsor? Any questions of the sponsor? Seeing no questions of the sponsor, there are no amendments. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify? Chantel Smith waves in support. Barney Bishop. Waves in support, thank you. Matthew Dunnigan. Waves in support. Seeing no further public testimony, is there debate? Representative Fine, in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just briefly wanted to thank you for one portion of the bill, the part relating to drones flying over schools. Ironically, since October 7th, at certain schools in the state of Florida, they have started to observe private people flying drones over them during the school day. And I just wanted to make people aware of that because you might read that part of the bill and say, why do we even need this? It's unfortunate that we do, but apparently there was nothing that those schools could do about it and obviously frightened the teachers and the students and the parents. So I'm very grateful for you getting this into the bill and addressing it. And I know there's certain parents that this will put their minds at ease. So thank you for that.
Is there any further debate? Any further debate? Seeing no further debate, Representative Trabolsi, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Briefly but respectfully to the families of Parkland, I would just like to say we can provide all the great education in the world, but if our kids don't get home safe, it really doesn't mean a thing. And if it weren't for my prime co-sponsor, Representative Hunchowski, this bill may have not come to fruition because over the summer she invited me to tour Parkland as it stood still in time since the shootings. And I was just profoundly affected and hope that we can, you know, help keep kids safe every single day in the state of Florida and know that our work is not done because it is not, if this is going to happen again, it's when it's going to happen again and if the state of Florida is prepared. So I ask for your favorable support.
Thank you. Cheryl, please call the roll.
Chair Leak?
Yes.
Vice Chair McClure?
Yes.
Committee Whip Mooney? Ranking Member Driscoll?
Yes.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Andrade? Bale?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Brissada Cabrera?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Hunchowski?
Yes.
Masullo?
Yes.
Payne?
Yes.
Perez? Rommel?
Yes.
Sosman? Sosman? Schoaf? Silvers?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Williams?
Thank you. By your vote, the bill passes. Please show committee substitute for House Bill 1473 reported favorably. Thank you. Next, we'll take up committee substitute for House Bill 241 by Representatives Masullo and Payne. Representative Masullo, you're recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, HB 241 requires all contracted state group health insurance plans and HMOs provide coverage and payment for annual skin cancer screenings performed by a licensed dermatologist or a mid-level under the supervision of a licensed dermatologist without imposing any cost sharing requirements. Skin cancer is the most common type of cancer in the United States. Approximately 1 in 5 Americans develop skin cancer by the age of 70. Florida ranks second in the nation in new melanoma cases, which is the most aggressive form of skin cancer, most common aggressive form. And Florida ranks number one in skin cancer overall. Early detection is the key to the most minimal and cost-effective treatment and also will save lives. That's the bill.
Thank you, Representative Masullo. Are there questions on the bill? Questions on the bill? Seeing no questions on the bill, there are no amendments. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify? Shantae Jones waves in support. Jared Fowler waves in support. Seeing no further public testimony, is there debate? Is there debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Masullo, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would simply say Chair Payne and I would ask for your favorable support.
Thank you. Cheryl, please call the roll.
Chair Leak?
Yes.
Vice Chair McClure? Committee Whip Mooney? Ranking Member Driscoll?
Yes.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Andrade? Bale?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Brissada Cabrera?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Hunchowski?
Yes.
Masullo?
Yes.
Payne?
Yes.
Perez? Rommel?
Yes.
Sosman? Schoaf? Silvers?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Thank you. By your vote, the bill passes. Please show committee substitute for House Bill 241 reported favorably.
Thank you.
Next, we'll move up to the presentation of committee substitute for House Bill 537 by Representative Valdez. Representative Valdez, you're recognized to explain your bill.
Good morning, Chair Leak, Vice Chair McClure, Committee Whip Vernon, Ranking Member Leader Driscoll, and committee members. Thank you for allowing me to present PCS for House Bill 537 today. This bill does two things. The bill deletes all of the provisions of the Education Code related to the Certificate of Completion, removing the Certificate of Completion as an option for students with sufficient high school credits but failing to meet the standardized assessment or GPA requirements for graduation with a standard high school diploma. However, This bill maintains the provision that permits a student to remain in high school either as a full-time student or a part-time student for up to an additional year and receive the special instruction designed to remedy their identified deficiency. Second, this bill establishes the two-year music-based supplemental content to accelerated learner engagement and success, also known as MScales, pilot program within the Department of Education. The program is intended to assist districts in adapting music-based supplemental materials that support STEM courses for middle school students. The bill provides that the Department of Education is responsible for implementing the SCALES pilot program subject to appropriation by the legislature, which had the success with Early Childhood Music Education Incentive Program that we are expanding the pilot to middle school students. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there questions of the sponsor? Are there questions of the sponsor? Seeing no questions of the sponsor, there are no amendments. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify? Lorette Phillipson waves in support. Matt Herndon waves in support. Matt Herndon again, double waves in support. Edward Briggs waves in support. Actually, Mr. Briggs, you said you want to appear in person, but also wave in support. We'll keep it at waves in support. Nancy Lothar waves in support. Seeing no further public testimony, is there debate? Is there debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Valdez, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I ask for your favorable support in supporting our children. Thank you.
Thank you. Cheryl, please call the roll.
Chair Leak?
Yes.
Vice Chair McClure?
Yes.
Committee Whip Mooney? Ranking Member Driscoll?
Yes.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Andrade?
Yes.
Bell?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Rosada Cabrera?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Honchowski?
Yes.
Masullo?
Yes.
Payne?
Yes.
Perez? Rommel?
Yes.
Sosman? Schoaf? Silvers?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Thank you. By your vote, the bill passes. Please show committee substitute for House Bill 537 reported favorably.
Thank you.
We're going to move to Representative Overdorf to present House Bill 1007. Representative Overdorf, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's been a pleasure to work with the Attorney General on this bill. In Florida, the Department of Health estimates that almost one in four high school students, 22.1%, have vaped. And while not as high, more than one in 10 middle school students, 12.5%, have also vaped. This is a part of the 2023 results. Florida now has the dubious distinction of being the number one state in the country for illegal and illicit vapes. The Florida Retail Federation estimates that more than 363 million of illegal vapes were sold in Florida last year. In its current form, this bill creates a directory and requiring nicotine product manufacturers to register their product and provide DBPR with certain FDA-related documentation that the product is not prohibited by the FDA. This bill will require DBPR to put that directory online and for retailers and wholesalers to review to ensure only products in the directory are sold, and that is the bill.
Thank you, Representative Overdorf. Are there questions on the bill? We do have an amendment coming, but are there questions on the bill? Seeing no questions on the bill, Representative Overdorf, you're recognized to explain amendment number one, barcode 352843.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And although this may not be the amendment that some people were expecting today because we are on an appropriations committee, this deals directly with the appropriations for monitoring and managing the actual list that's associated with the retail products.
Thank you. Are there questions on the amendment? Any questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions on the amendment, is there public testimony on the amendment? No public testimony on the amendment. Is there debate on the amendment? Representative McClure.
Thank you, Chairman. And thank you, Representative Overdorf. Enjoyed our conversation yesterday. And I agree with you. This is not the forum for a policy debate. I unfortunately will not have that opportunity in the committee process, so it'll be the floor before I would have a chance to speak without getting into the granular details. I understand the intent of this bill. I think that actually the net of it will go against what we're trying to accomplish. I look forward to seeing your amendment in the next stop. Today, I am going to be a no, but look forward to getting to a good place where I can vote yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any further debate on the amendment? Any further debate on the amendment? Seeing no further debate on the amendment, Representative Overdorf, you're recognized to close on your amendment number one.
We have closed on the amendment.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying yay. Yay. All those opposed? Show the amendment adopted. We're back on the bill as amended. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on the bill as amended? Anna Melendez waves in support. Lorena Holly is a proponent. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Lorena Holly with the Florida Retail Federation. On behalf of our members, I'd like to thank Representative Overdorf for this good bill. A state vapor registry will play a vital role in providing clarity to retailers and consumers and reduce the risk of unknowingly selling illicit products. Increased transparency and accountability will go a long way in protecting consumers from the dangers of illicit products. We thank you for your consideration and encourage your favorable vote.
Thank you. Douglas, I think Janes, is an opponent. You're recognized, sir.
Thank you. Since 2015, I've owned two vape shops in Lutz, Florida. I drove up here this morning out of concern for my livelihood and my eight employees. My name is Douglas Janes. I started smoking when I was 16, and I did not discover vaping until I was 35. I've tried to quit smoking by the patch, hypnosis, even cold turkey. These products were the only thing that worked for me. When you quit smoking, you want to get away from anything that reminds you of tobacco, including tobacco flavors. Therefore, other flavors are extremely important to helping you quit smoking. This beer merely endorses a flawed federal application process where the feds deny 99% of all applications. Please oppose this bad bill. We hope the sponsor will continue to work with this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Michael Taylor, an opponent. You're recognized.
So this bill makes Florida to enforce for the FDA, basically. According to the National Institute of Health, cigarettes remain the leading cause of preventable death in the United States of America. Recently, a Yale professor conducted a study that found that flavor bans e-cigarettes actually increases cigarette sales. The undeniable purpose of this bill is to ban e-cigarettes and eliminate the competition for big tobacco. All I got.
Thank you. David Shep waves in support. Edgar Castro waves in support. Nikki Marenghi, I'm sorry if I'm not pronouncing your name correctly, waves in opposition. Jonathan, is it Rister? Thank you. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jonathan Ristine. I participated in the PMTA process. My small business submitted applications for 384 different products, which were all denied in the blanket denial with the rest of the industry. Big tobacco vape registration bill has been introduced in a lot of states this year. I believe as of yesterday, it's up to 21. This bill is designed to utilize the FDA's flawed PMTA process as a way to ban products, shut down small vape outfits, and to strip adults of their freedom to have access to the harm reduction vapor products they actually want. Louisiana adopted this same registration bill in the fall. They have already issued an emergency injunction due to the business closures and state revenue loss. They've already turned it off. This bill will eliminate all of the products my customers want. This bill won't control or stop demand. The only ones who control demand are customers. They will seek out the products they want online from out-of-state retailers. We will have a huge black market flooded with counterfeit products, and all of the responsible, law-abiding shop owners will be closed, just like in Louisiana. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Aaron Gelman. Aaron Gelman waves in opposition. I'm sorry, next up we have in Orlando. Sorry, I can't read your first name. As an opponent. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. I'm a vape shop owner in Clearwater, Florida, and volunteer as the president of Florida Smoke Free Association. This bill and its sister bill in the Senate are de facto flavor ban on vape products and do absolutely nothing for our state or public health. The bill forces manufacturers to comply with the FDA's pre-market tobacco application or PMTA process. Millions of applications for individual products were submitted to the FDA through the PMTA process, and only 23 e-cigarette products and devices were approved. Those 23 approved products were big tobacco products. It is estimated the big tobacco companies have lost more than $700 billion to the vape industry in the last decade. Because of this, big tobacco themselves have been trying to get into the vape industry. Big tobacco is pushing this language in the bill, and not only here in Florida, but as you've heard, more than 10 other states throughout our country, because they are the only ones with PMTA-approved products. This bill is essentially a flavor ban on nicotine vape devices and would immediately force me and 10,000 other small mom-and-pop businesses around the state to close. Our own governor vetoed a flavor ban bill in 2020 because he recognized the devastating impact it would have on small businesses, and a huge black market would be created, which you and I don't want. We hope you will join us in the commitment in defending personal adult freedoms, small business, and limiting government overreach, and oppose this bill. Our industry accounts for $1.2 billion in Florida and thousands of jobs. We hope we can work with a sponsor to improve it.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Joseph Carco. Mr. Carco, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair and committee. My name is Joe Carco from Pensacola. I've been in the business 10 years in the vape industry because I saw a great opportunity to help get people away from using tobacco products. No one under 21 is allowed in my store. We don't sell to anybody, and we always ID as the law that we support 100%. Vaping is a less harmful way of getting the nicotine than cigarettes, and we often work with the customers so they can step down their nicotine process and get off totally. For adults trying to quit smoking, it's helpful to have products that don't smell or taste like tobacco. Therefore, flavors are important, a way to step down off the cigarettes. This bill would have an enormous impact to my business, and like you heard, thousands of others, and the whole, like everybody just said, the PMTA process has been pretty much floored so far. So we ask for your proposal. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Dan Marlin. Mr. Marlin, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, Vice Chair, committee members. My company participated in the FDA's PMTA process. In fact, my company ended up suing the federal government, and we were successful right here in the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. I would like the committee to understand how this bill is big government overreach. It took me approximately 2 years to compile the information needed to apply through the PMTA process. It took my staff and myself more than 4,000 man hours to prepare the applications for the 3,500 individual products we submitted. For each of those 35 products, we had to submit thousands of clinical studies showing the health benefits of these products versus that of combustible tobacco. For each of these 35 products, we had to submit a separate application through the FDA's portal. I would estimate the pages of the documents that were uploaded to each of these products would have been around 16,000 per product. Basically, we provided the federal government with more than 56 million pages for our submissions. It cost me over $500,000 to submit these applications to FDA, and on top of that, I've now lost over $600,000 annually since 2020 because I've lost wholesale customers, as you've heard earlier, to all the states that have flavor bans that are in place, including New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, California, which have all banned these products. I've also had to spend over $30,000 to pay attorneys so we could sue the federal government when the FDA arbitrarily and capriciously denied my applications. In total, the FDA PMTA process has cost my business that is based here in Florida more than $2 million. This is big government personified. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Angela Weatherholt. And next up will be Baha Qasim, or Qasim. You're recognized.
Thank you. My name is Angela Weatherholt, and I am a vape shop manager in Daytona Beach. In previous committees, there has been claim on that youth vaping is up. In November 2023, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, and the U.S. Food and Drug Administration released a study showing that during 2022 and 2023, e-cigarette use declined from 14.1% to 10% among high school students. Declines also occurred for use of combustible tobacco products, including cigars, among the high school students. The decline in e-cigarette use among high school students shows great progress, but we still have a lot of work to do. Unfortunately, this bill does nothing to address our youth vaping, and it hands a monopoly over to our big tobacco. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Sir, Baha, is it Qasim? Qasim? Yep. Thank you, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Baha Qasim. I'm from Tallahassee, Florida. I have 10 vape shops here in Tallahassee and Crawfordville area. I've been in business for over 15 years. We have over 40 to 50 employees that work for us here in town. I started to use these products myself over 10 years ago, never looked back. I used to smoke 2 packs a day. Everyone that enters our store, customer, salesman or not, must show ID at entry. And at point of purchase, they will show ID again, 21 and up, of course. This bill will destroy my family business and the 40, 50 other families that I feed, our business feeds. And it'll impinge on adult freedom to choose less harmful products. It's not fair. Thank you for your time. Appreciate everything.
Thank you, sir. Ernesto Fragoso. You're recognized.
Morning. My name is Ernesto. I traveled from Jacksonville, Florida, to share some undeniable facts, legitimate facts based on medical studies. To start off, a lot of these facts are often distorted and sensationalized by Tobacco Free Florida and the Truth Initiative. I'm sure we've seen plenty of their commercials. But delivery matters, and I fail to understand why we're discussing teen use and teen access when this bill has nothing to do with that. It doesn't solve that. It's not a solution for that. We do have solutions to help with the teen use and teen access problem, but that's not what this bill is for. A responsible retailer can be on this registry, but the bad actors are still going to sell on the black market. You're just forcing responsible retailers to jump on this registry. Now, this registry requires a PMTA approval. Since 2018, the FDA has authorized that PMTA approval to 900 new cigarettes and 8 new cigarettes. 8 of those e-cigarettes are owned by Big Tobacco. I have 3,872 vape products in my single store. Not a single one of them is owned by Big Tobacco. It's thousands of small mom-and-pop independent businesses all throughout the United States. The FDA and Big Tobacco are already in bed. Florida does not need to join them. Unlike tobacco smoke that contains 70 cancer-causing carcinogens, nicotine vapor contains 0. On the other hand, nicotine vaping has not been responsible for a single death. There are 480,000 Americans every year. The significant drop in teen smoking rates and vaping rates today is actually a direct reflection of education, not fear-mongering and scare tactics. I say this because at the end of the day, the question stands between vapes and cigarettes, which is the lesser harm? I know we all want to say don't use either, but this is about policy for public health, not our own emotions. This is a free state and a free country, and any attempt to prohibit a product leads to years of back and forth discussions and unhappy constituents. Instead, let's focus on making available products less harmful. I would be happy to talk about common sense solutions that will actually address the youth use and access. And here's a hint, it's not in this registry bill. In closing, I urge you to reconsider the language for the bill for the sake of the public health. It will eliminate the safer vaping options in my industry and inadvertently handle control back to the tobacco giants. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you, sir. Next up, John Gard, Office of the Attorney General. Thank you, sir. Next up, Barney Bishop. Waves and support. Next up, Heather Turnbull. Waves and support. Next up, Rosanna Catalano. Ms. Catalano, waving in support. Oh, she's coming, okay. Okay, thank you. You're recognized.
Thank you. My name's Rosanna Catalano and I represent the Florida Smoke-Free Association. This bill is a de facto flavor ban, excuse me, on vape products, and it will have a tremendous economic impact into Florida. The bill only allows manufacturers to sell these products in Florida if they meet one of three requirements. The first requirement allows a manufacturer to sell these products if that manufacturer has an application submitted to the FDA that has not received a determination. This is highly improbable to meet because the FDA issued a press release stating that they have gone through 99% of the millions of applications they received. Nearly every manufacturer that submitted through the PMTA process has received an unfavorable determination. The second requirement that this bill spells out is that it allows manufacturers to sell if the manufacturer has received a denial from the FDA and then has sued the FDA and has received a stay or an injunction. Once again, this is highly improbable, a highly improbable scenario because lawsuits are incredibly expensive, especially when you're suing the federal government. And third, the third requirement in this bill is if the product has been approved by the FDA. This is also completely improbable because the FDA has only approved 23 electronic nicotine delivery systems, ENDS products, to date. The only flavor approved by the FDA to date is tobacco, a flavor that smokers want to get away from when trying to quit smoking using vape products. I can't imagine the state of Florida would allow any licensure, application, or permit process to have a 99% denial rate. The FDA has not enforced their regulatory scheme because it is completely flawed, with no uniformity of application because the federal courts are all over the place on this. This bill would deputize DBPR to enforce FDA's overreach, all while killing a billion-dollar industry and thousands of jobs here in Florida. There has been testimony in previous committees regarding the federal court's ruling in the 11th Circuit. Our own federal court here in Florida found the FDA process arbitrary and capricious. Make no mistake that that court's ruling will have precedential value on all future cases. We look forward to working with the sponsor on improving this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no further public testimony, we will move into debate, and I'll kick us off. Out of respect for the member who's presenting this bill in the Attorney General's office, I put this bill on the agenda today. I have serious problems with the policy and the process by which this is moving through. But I'm going to vote yes today so that you have an opportunity to go to the next committee and fix a bill that I think needs a lot of fixing. I'm going to start by saying that, you know, any process that relies on the FDA for approval, I find suspect because of how I know the FDA to operate. But I am going to vote yes today. I will hope that by the time this bill makes it to in front of me again on the floor, there have been substantial revisions to make the bill a much better bill. Now, is there any further debate? Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Rep. Gregory, I mean, I called you Rep. Gregory, I'm so sorry.
Happens all the time.
Rep. Overshore. I've literally gone back and forth on this so much. After hearing the testimony today, I am down, but I do hope that there are opportunities to continue to work on this because I think what you're trying to do is a good thing. It seems to me that this is not there yet, so thanks.
Any further debate? Representative Gregory.
Rep. Gregory, I also like your bill.
Any further debate?
Debate.
Representative Williams.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. On the same reason that you spoke about, I will be down on the bill. We had a couple small business owners come and present to us today about the struggle that they're having and how 99% turned down is just too much for me to be able to vote up for. So I'll be down on the bill today.
Any further debate? Rep. Stevenson.
Thank you. I have always like the idea that the flavors would go away, and I appreciate the people that came today and explained that it was also an issue for smokers going off. As a non-smoker, I appreciate that input. I hope there's a way to find a balanced approach that makes sure that safe products are available. We've seen in things like prohibition and different things where we close one door, including like sometimes lending things that we don't really like, but there is still a market need for it. That sometimes being in a regulated situation instead of going to the black market is preferable, and I'm interested in learning more about this. But I appreciate the comments. Thank you.
Representative Benjamin, a debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It was interesting listening to the presentations and the testimony with regards to this because it's like Representative Stevenson said, it's like we're trying to get people to stop smoking tobacco, which opened the door to vaping, which I've learned the CDC has even said is actually bad for you as well, almost as bad as smoking tobacco. So it's like these two very bad things now are coming before us to fight about who should be allowed and how they should be allowed in the marketplace. It is a very interesting dynamic of two things that I would not encourage anybody to be doing. But for today, I'm going to be up on your bill, but I do, like the chair, hope to see some improvements made along the way.
Any further debate? Any further debate? Vice Chair McClure.
Thank you, Chair. It occurred to me that I am not caffeinated enough and debated on the amendment, so I'll carry all of that forward. And would add, you know, I think, you know, if you look at the Senate version, there's actually one of those options that's not even in play. They're saying that if you're in litigation, and that goes to what we spoke about yesterday, if you're in litigation, then you have to cease selling products through that process, which, separate and apart from where you're at on this issue, is an interesting precedent that I don't subscribe to. So this thing's just too I like you, Chair Leake, want to work with the bill sponsor. He's been awesome. We had a great conversation yesterday. Open line of communication, as usual. Want to help him get to a good place. But this one's so far away from for me, and then I look across at our colleagues in the Senate, and I can't get there on this. So I'm going to be, like I said earlier, a no, but want to keep working with you, Rep. Overdorf. Let's get this thing to a good place.
Is there any further debate? Any further debate? Seeing no further debate, Representative Overdorf, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not one to defend the Biden administration or the federal administrative state or, frankly, the FDA, but this bill attempts to respond and ameliorate problems from companies who have lawfully applied for the FDA and to continue to marketing their nicotine products and to keep selling them. It's about safety is really what it boils down to. And I will just read a quick excerpt and I'll be on my way. Amid national backlash over the dangers of youth vaping, Juul Labs, Inc. is pushing for tighter marketplace regulations to help stave off youth demand while also making the industry safe overall. In a recent open letter addressed to the Florida House of Representatives and the Senate, Juul urged lawmakers to endorse SB 1006 and House Bill 1007, legislative proposals aimed at establishing a well-regulated marketplace for legal nicotine vaping products in Florida. I ask for your support, and with that, I close.
Thank you. Having closed on this bill, we'll now proceed to vote. Chair, will you please call the roll?
Chair Leak?
Yes.
Committee Whip Mooney?
Yes.
Ranking Member Driscoll?
No.
Representatives Altman? Andrade?
No.
Bale?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Quezada Cabrera? Yes. Cheney?
Yes.
Daly?
No.
Fine?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
No.
Grant? Yes. Gregory?
Yes.
Hunchowski?
No.
Masullo? Yes. Payne?
Yes.
Perez?
Yes.
Rommel?
Yes.
Sosman?
Yes.
Schoaf?
Yes.
Silvers?
No.
Skidmore?
No.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Williams?
No.
Vice Chair McClure?
No.
Yeas, 9 nays.
Thank you. By your vote, the bill passes. Please show House Bill 1007 reported favorably.
Thank you, members.
We'll next move to committee substitute for House Bill 885. Representative Gonzalez-Pittman, you're up. You're recognized.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Vice Chair McClure and Ranking Member Driscoll and the committee members. House Bill 885 authorizes the state group health insurance plans to pay for biomarker testing. It also authorizes ACA to pay for biomarker testing under the Medicaid program. It specifies that biomarker testing coverage is required after diagnosis and must be used to provide the physician with information that is actionable in the development of the patient's plan of care for treatment or monitoring. In 2023, 162,000 Floridians were diagnosed with cancer. Cancer comes in second to the leading cause of death for Floridians. Biomarker testing is often used to help a physician determine the most effective treatment for the patient, and just as important, avoid treatments that are not likely to work. Cancer biomarkers provide or identify and target the patient's treatment course. Cancer biomarkers provide a great value in improving the management of cancer patients. Currently, 60% of the drugs that have been launched in the past 5 years require biomarker testing prior to use. But biomarker testing is not widely covered by insurance. Only 20 to 30% of eligible patients referred have access to biomarkers. That means that an average of 121,000 patients who have been diagnosed with cancer do not get the biomarker test. Biomarker testing is highly cost-effective, with an average cost of a biomarker test being $477. Cost savings are achieved through informing the physician as to what treatment will be most effective for the patient and their specific cancer type. And that's the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions of the sponsor? Members, are there any questions of the sponsor? Seeing no questions of the sponsor, there are no amendments. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify? Tony Large waves in support. Susan Harbin, proponent of the bill. Thank you. You're recognized.
Good morning. I just want to thank the sponsor for championing this issue on behalf of not only ACS-CAN and cancer patients, but lots of other patient advocate groups outside of the cancer space. Precision medicine and personalized medicine is really the future of treatment for lots of different disease categories. And biomarker testing is often a critical step to match a patient up with one of those targeted therapies. Moreover, it helps the provider determine what will work and what won't work. And for example, this means potentially avoiding chemotherapy if it's not necessary. So this is better for the patient, it reduces costs, and it's promoting longevity and longer lives for cancer patients and, you know, patients of other disease types. We've passed this bill in 14 other states, including Texas, Georgia, Louisiana. We would love Florida to be the next state. We're not talking about a blanket mandate here. We're really just talking about aligning coverage with the medical and scientific evidence. We're not talking about experimental treatments or just, you know, if a provider wants to do something. We're saying if it's become the standard of care and a test has gone through the rigorous process of becoming an NCCN guideline or an ASCO guideline, a national practice guideline that informs providers about what is the standard of care treatment for particular conditions, then we don't want to have patients going back and forth with their insurance companies to determine if something should be covered. If it's standard of care, then it should be covered. And we don't want patients to waste, you know, weeks or potentially months, especially when it could be, you know, dealing with a later stage diagnosis. They just don't have that kind of time. Additionally, you know, I think there's examples, of course, in your analysis. This really does, it's going to save money. And ideally, we would have this bill still apply across the board to all state regulated plans. We understand that there have been some changes, and now it's Medicaid and the state group plan only, which it's a great first step, but we hope that we'll be able to show you the data and the cost savings and come back and broaden this back up in the near future. But I can answer any questions, but thank you.
Thank you very much. Next up, we have Ashley Lyerly. The American Lung Association waves in support. Seeing no further public testimony, we are in debate. Is there debate? Representative Cheney, in debate.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Rep, for bringing this really good bill forward. The first time I heard about this was at the National Council of Insurance Legislators, NCOIL, and I debated on behalf of this bill and voted for this bill as model legislation. With my personal experience with cancer, it is so important to get the right drug at the right time. And with all the medical advances we have, we, you know, historically have just cut and burn. And it's, yes, it's standard of care, but it's not always effective. And we've got such better technology now to make sure that we can provide the right medication and not harm a patient with the wrong medication. I've had experience with that. It's tragic. And so I appreciate that you're doing this, and I look forward to this saving money, ending some suffering for some people, and maybe even some tragedy. So thank you very much.
Representative Masullo, in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, I've had some experience with this particular issue, and this is really a common sense type of proposal. You know, in today's world, as we develop new medications, they don't work on everyone. They don't work on all disease states. What they do work on are disease states that have a particular genomic characteristic. That characteristic is exactly what biomarkers identify in an individual. That's why it's important that we advance the practice of medicine by using the most specific, most effective forms of treatment. They cannot be determined simply by a diagnosis of a disease. They have to be determined by drilling down to the specifics of that disease's particular DNA subtypes. So I would ask everyone to vote in favor of this bill.
Thank you, members. Is there any further debate? Any further debate? Seeing no further debate, Representative Gonzalez-Pittman, you are recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you. Currently in Florida, 75% of commercial insurance plans do not cover biomarker testing, which is considered to be the gold standard for cancer care. This bill aims in providing Floridians with the gold standard of care, specifically those battling cancer. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair, will you please call the roll?
Chair Leak?
Yes.
Vice Chair McClure? Committee Whip Mooney? Yes. Ranking Member Driscoll?
Yes.
Representatives Altman? Andrade? Bell?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Posada Cabrera? Yes. Cheney?
Yes.
Daly? Fine?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Gregory? Yes. Ponchowski?
Yes.
Masullo?
Yes.
Payne?
Yes.
Perez?
Yes.
Rommel?
Yes.
Sosman?
Yes.
Schoaf?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
McClure?
Yes.
By your vote, show the bill passes. Please show committee substitute for House Bill 885 reported favorably. Thank you. Next up, we'll take committee substitute for House Bill 1267. Representative Anderson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Leak, Vice Chair McClure, Ranking Member, and members of the committee. Thank you for taking the time to hear CS for HB 1267, Economic Self-Sufficiency. Members, Florida invests a lot of state and federal funding into what I call an alphabet soup of programs. We have SNAP, TCA, SR, ENT, just to name a few. And the goal of these programs is to help families become economically self-sufficient to produce the best possible outcomes for their children. But sadly, most families in these programs don't actually reach self-sufficiency. We see a lot of these folks graduate from receiving TCA just to return a few months later. Many stay on these programs for years. Some actually never get off these programs, which is enabling a generational cycle of poverty where children don't advance economically. For example, only one-third of those that are participating in food assistance, TCA, or Medicaid in 2017 had exited the program for at least 6 months by 2021. More than 40% of families that have participated in the school readiness program have done so for 12 months or longer. And just under half of those that are on TCA who have exited the program when they start earning a higher income, we see half of them come back on that program just a month later. So there's a lot of reasons why families have a hard time reaching self-sufficiency, like lack of childcare, lack of transportation. Some of these individuals don't have high school diplomas. And while we have these robust programs here in the state to help these families, oftentimes bad design of these programs actually prevent them from being effective. And one of the most significant design issues is what we call a benefit cliff, where sometimes a very small amount of income can prevent someone from cause someone to completely lose their benefits, especially their child care subsidy. And oftentimes just the fear of going over this cliff is enough to prevent an individual from seeking a promotion or trying to do better for themselves financially. So this bill seeks to maximize the effectiveness of our benefits programs with a focus on benefit cliffs. And the bill does this in a couple ways. It standardizes the intake and discharge assessments for the various programs and requires DCF to report their findings to the legislature annually. It allows GED classes to count as one of the allowable activities for adults receiving TCA. It requires adult SNAP recipients to participate in education and training programs so they can advance their careers. And it provides case management services and requires the use of a Cliff Navigator tool when local workforce boards are working with families so they can provide individually tailored information about benefit cliffs. And then finally, it addresses the benefit cliffs for the school readiness program by extending eligibility based on state standards rather than the arbitrary federal standards that are in place right now. And it completely replaces that cliff with an off-ramp that can more securely advance individuals' careers. Mr. Chair, that is the bill.
Thank you. Are there any questions on the bill? We do have an amendment, but are there any questions on the bill? Seeing no questions on the bill, Representative Tomko, you're recognized to explain amendment number one, barcode 039597.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment adds an appropriation for the school readiness subsidy program created in section 11 of the bill.
Are there questions on the amendment? Any public testimony on the amendment? Any debate on the amendment? Representative Tomko, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
Waive close.
All those in favor signify by saying yay.
Yay.
All those opposed, no. Show the amendment adopted. We're back on the bill as amended. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify? Nancy Lothar waves in support. Seeing no other public testimony, is there debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Anderson, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll waive close.
Thank you. Cheryl, please call the roll.
Chair Leak?
Yes.
Vice Chair McClure?
Yes.
Committee Whip Mooney?
Yes.
Ranking Member Driscoll?
Yes.
Representatives Altman? Andrade?
Yes.
Bale?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Brisada Cabrera?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Hunchowski?
Yes.
Masullo? Payne?
Yes.
Perez?
Yes.
Rommel?
Yes.
Sosman?
Yes.
Schoaf?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Thank you. By your vote, the bill passes. Please show committee substitute for House Bill 1267 reported favorably.
Thank you, Chair. Thank
you. We'll now move to committee substitute for House Bill 707. Representative Silvers, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. This bill allows state universities to properly budget for unforeseen circumstances. Currently, by law, each state university is required to maintain a minimum carryforward balance of at least 7% of its state operating budget. This bill would allow universities to carry forward in excess of that 7%. That carryforward amount would, the use of that, those funds would be subject to the approval by the Board of Governors and the university's trustee board. That is the bill.
Thank you. Are there any questions on the bill? Seeing no questions or no amendments, is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify? Thank you. Tony Lee waves in support. Tiffany Garling waves in support. Sarah Massey waves in support. Seeing no further testimony, is there debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Silvers, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Waive close.
Cheryl, please call the roll.
Chair Leak?
Yes.
Vice Chair McClure? Committee Whip Mooney?
Yes.
Ranking Member Driscoll?
Yes.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Andrade?
Yes.
Bale?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Brisada Cabrera?
Yes.
Cheney? Cheney? Daly?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Garrison? Gottlieb?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Hunchowski?
Yes.
Masullo?
Yes.
Payne?
Yes.
Perez?
Yes.
Rommel?
Yes.
Sosman?
Yes.
Schoaf?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Thank you. By your vote, the bill passes. Please show committee substitute for House Bill 707 reported favorably. We'll now move to House Bill 765. Representative Daly, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 765 is the request of the National Guard, and it clarifies language when it comes to leave policy for guardsmen. That's the bill.
Thank you. Are there questions on the bill? Any questions of the sponsor? Seeing no questions of the sponsor, there are no amendments. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify? Mark Oglesby, Department of Military Affairs, waves in support. Seeing no further public testimony, is there debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Daly, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Waive close, Chair.
Thank you. Cheryl, please call the roll.
Chair Leak?
Yes.
Vice Chair McClure? Committee Whip Mooney?
Yes.
Ranking Member Driscoll?
Yes.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Andrade?
Yes.
Bale?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Rosado Cabrera?
Yes.
Cheney? Daly?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Garrison? Gottlieb?
Yes.
Grant? Gregory?
Yes.
Ponchowski?
Yes.
Masullo? Payne?
Yes.
Perez? Rommel?
Yes.
Sosman?
Yes.
Schoaf?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Thank you. By your vote, the bill passes. Please show House Bill 765 reported favorably. We will now move to House Bill 1013. Representative Stevenson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. The State Board of Administration is responsible for investing the funds of the Florida Retirement System and administering the FRS investment plan. This bill would allow the SBA to generate liquidity by securitizing alternative investments, much like what a homeowner does when taking out a home equity loan on their residence. This would allow the SBA to rebalance their portfolio and generate liquidity. Rebalancing is an important way to manage risk and is part of their duty as fiduciaries. When the value of certain investment types cause them the managed funds to exceed their target percentages, they would be able to take the gains from those investments and redistribute them to other parts of their portfolio, which is easy to do with stocks and bonds, but not venture capital and private equity, which we refer to as alternative investments. In the SBA's in the past, SBA has sold positions in these alternative investments to accomplish the goals, and that can result in the fund foregoing future gains or even having to accept discounts on values when there are fewer potential bidders. The market has evolved to allow for securitization as an alternative to outright sales. In these situations, the SBA would be able to issue securities or bonds and receive the proceeds from the purchaser. The purchaser of the security, or the lender, would hold the rights to income from private equity investments as repayment and security for the bonds, and the SBA would retain ownership of the underlying investment. The SBA intends to implement the program to be without recourse to the State Board of Administration or Florida Retirement System Trust Fund. In this structure, the security for the bonds would be the income from the related alternative investment. The bill would limit the program conservatively to 5% of the SBA's fund to the SBA funds. Benefits of this small change include avoiding the need to sell into a distressed market, lower transaction cost, and it would allow the SBA the flexibility to generate liquidity, rebalance their portfolio, and maximize investment returns. That's good for everyone in the state because more returns means less GR we would have to put in to the funds. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there questions on the bill? Any questions of the sponsor? Seeing no questions of the sponsor, there are no amendments. Is there anyone in the audience wishing to testify? I'm going to say Lamar Taylor, State Board of Administration, here for information only. Thank you. Is there debate? Members, is there debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Stevenson, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Wave close, Chair.
Thank you. Cheryl, please call the roll.
Chair Leak?
Yes.
Vice Chair McClure?
Yes.
Committee Whip Mooney?
Yes.
Ranking Member Driscoll?
Yes.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Andrade? Bale?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Rosado Cabrera? Cheney?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Garrison? Gottlieb?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Ponchowski?
Yes.
Masullo?
Yes.
Payne?
Yes.
Perez? Rommel?
Yes.
Sosman?
Yes.
Schoaf?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Thank you. By your vote, the bill passes. Please show House Bill 1013 reported favorably. Next up, we'll take up House Bill 1109 by Representative Fine. Representative Fine, you're recognized.
Thank you. 7 years ago, as a freshman in the Florida House, I was able to get funding for security for Jewish day schools. And for those who don't think it can be done, I did it actually as a budget amendment.
But I have advocated for that every year that I've been here in the legislature as a non-recurring vehicle. As I prepare to leave, I've thought about what might happen next. And so what House Bill 1109 will do is create the possibility that this kind of funding can be put in the budget on a recurring basis, although the bill, as currently constructed, does have no fiscal, and that is the bill.
Thank you, Representative Fine. Are there questions on the bill? Any questions of the sponsor? Seeing no questions on the sponsor, there's some public testimony. Nancy Lothar, Florida PTA, waves in support. Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, looks like he waves in support. Seeing no further public testimony, is there debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Fine, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Wave close.
Cheryl, please call the roll.
Chair Leak?
Yes.
Vice Chair McClure?
Yes.
Committee Whip Mooney?
Yes.
Ranking Member Driscoll?
Yes.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Andrade?
Yes.
Bell? Benjamin?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Posada Cabrera?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Daley?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Garrison? Gottlieb?
Yes.
Grant? Yes. Gregory?
Yes.
Ponchowski?
Yes.
Masullo?
Yes.
Payne?
Yes.
Perez? Rommel?
Yes.
Sosman?
Yes.
Schoaf?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Thank you. By your vote, the bill passes. Please show House Bill 1109 reported favorably. We'll next move to committee substitute for House Bill 1645. Representative Payne.
Thank you, Chair. Members, House Bill 1645 updates Florida's energy policy and amends specific energy-related laws. I will tell you that there are amendments coming. I didn't feel that the amendments were appropriate to have in the appropriations forum, so there will be amendments coming, but specifically provides for an updated statement of legislative intent concerning the state's energy policy, updates energy policy statements and current law and duties of FDACs, increases the minimum length of an interstate natural gas pipeline that requires certification, requires certain statutes pertaining to natural gas resiliency and reliability, provides for the recovery of certain facility relocation costs incurred by a natural gas utility through a separate charge of base rate, excuse me, requires the PSC to conduct an assessment of the security and resiliency of the state's electrical grid and natural gas facilities, prohibits the PSC from authorizing a public utility to make a direct sale of energy to consumers solely for powering a means of transportation, authorizes the PSC to approve a utility program for residential EV charging, requires DMS to develop the Florida Humane Preferred Energy Products List, repeals the Renewable Energy and Energy Efficient Technology Grant Program, prohibits community development districts and HOAs from prohibiting certain types of fuels and appliances that use such fuels, requires the PSC to evaluate the technical and economic feasibility of using advanced nuclear power technology and to submit a report, requires FDOT to study and evaluate the potential development of hydrogen fuel infrastructure to support hydrogen-powered vehicles. The bill does not appear to have a fiscal impact on the state revenues, but may have an indeterminate negative fiscal impact on expenditures. And that is the bill, Chair.
Thank you. Are there questions of the sponsor? Representative Fine for a question of the sponsor.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And my questions are only about a couple parts of the bill, and, you know, you may be planning to amend them, and if so, you could say that. But related to the electric vehicle issues, your Section 4 says that the commission can no longer authorize a public utility to do direct sales of energy to somebody basically who's driving an electric vehicle. Why? I mean, what's the reasoning behind that provision?
Representative Payne.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, there's certainly going to be some amendments to that section, but I believe we're trying to look at making sure that if there's rate recovery on EV charging stations, is only the rate recovery at the deployment of the time of the vehicle or the owner of the vehicle to that vehicle and not to everyone else in the state.
Follow up?
Representative Fine.
Okay, so you're saying that this language, which I understand there may be concerns with how you do it, and I get it in part because it may be difficult for the electric utility to compete with someone who doesn't make the electricity and the distribution of power to an electric vehicle. But right now what this says is they can't do it at all. And so is it your statement that this part of the bill is going to change down the road so this language won't be what's in it when it gets to the floor?
Representative Payne.
That's correct.
Okay. Another section.
Mr. Representative Fine.
Thank you. The next section, and maybe the answer is the same, says that they can only do residential customer-specific electric vehicle charging, of which, by the way, I have two cars that do this. If the commission determines that the rates and rate structure won't adversely impact the public utility's general body of ratepayers, again, what does that mean? I don't understand it.
Representative Payne.
Very similar answer, Representative Fine, is that we want, since EVs do not contribute to the transportation road tax, but that's a separate issue, we want to make sure that those that drive EVs and everyone else that doesn't drive an EV is not on the hook for EV rates.
Representative Fine.
Okay, I guess I'll save my rest of my stuff for debate.
Thank you. Any further questions of the sponsor? Seeing no further questions of the sponsor, there are no amendments. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify? Kim Dinkins, Thousand Friends of Florida, waves in opposition. Alyssa Schaefer is an opponent. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, committee. I will keep this brief. I know you have a long agenda today. Alyssa Schaefer, I'm with the Energy and Policy Institute, and I'm also a Florida utility customer, as we all are. We all use energy, and this is a very large bill with some pretty sweeping policy changes, and has already been alluded to, some of it is not very clear. There's potential for a lot of confusion in some of this language as well. And for me, when I look at it, I also don't see any really adequate protections for consumers. And as a consumer of electricity, that's the perspective that I wanted to bring to the committee today. As I said, there's a lot of really big changes in this bill, and some of them seem to actually undo protections that we have in place. The one example that I wanted to highlight, I believe it's on line 700. I know there's been some changes and some amendments on the way. This has to do with the siting process for pipelines. So right now, under current state law, if a pipeline is over 15 miles long, it goes through this additional siting process, a certification process, and this is a way to safeguard our Florida communities. This language would increase that number up to 100 miles. So 100 miles, that's a pretty big construction project, and I think removing a certification requirement for a construction process of such length that's going through multiple neighborhoods, multiple communities, and it just doesn't need to be certified anymore, to me, that raises a lot of red flags. There's a lot of public concern and public risk potentially with that. I also know there's other language floating around. I'm not sure what the amendments will include, but I do want to flag some concern around that if this ends up matching, for example, some of the renewable natural gas stuff that we're seeing on the Senate side. There's a lot of concern that that would cause customer bills to increase. So again, not any protections, not any guardrails there for consumers. So I would respectfully request that you oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Kenya Corey, waves in support. Alex Miller, waves in support. Ryan Lee, an opponent. Mr. Lee, you're recognized.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak. I'm here representing Rethink Energy Action Fund. We and our sister C3 work with folks all over the state on lowering their power bills through energy efficiency and clean renewable energy. We believe that this bill could lead to higher utility bills by introducing new incentives for unproven technologies and energy sources. We should encourage investments into more renewable energy that keeps energy costs affordable. Additionally, charging ratepayers via cost recovery could impose unnecessary burdens without any guaranteed tangible benefits. We're hoping that you will reject this bill, which fails to deliver clear advantages while imposing additional challenges to the public. We do look forward to seeing if these issues can be resolved in the amendment process, but we cannot support the bill at this time.
Thank you. David Cullen. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dave Cullen for Sierra Club Florida, and I will be quite brief. The bill is about energy resources. We feel that it kind of has a thumb on the scale for the traditional fossil fuels and against renewable energy. I'm glad to hear the potential amendment that's coming with respect to impacts on EVs. Hope we can work with the sponsor to make it fair for everyone so that we can move forward and protect both our economy and our people and the planet. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no further public testimony, is there debate? Representative Fine, in debate. Oh, I'm sorry, we do have one more. One more public testimony. Christopher Strandberg waves in support. Now we're in debate. Representative Fine, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As my questions indicated, I have significant concerns about two parts of this bill, and frankly, concerns that I think, if not addressed, could cause, frankly, catastrophic effects. Section 4 of this bill says an electric utility can't sell electricity to people who drive electric vehicles. Now, I will say a few years ago when I got one and I had to put in a charger at a place I lived, the person got mad that it was going to disrupt things and asked why I couldn't just put gas in my car. But that's not how these cars work. And if you limit the folks who actually make the power from selling it to the people who need the power, you could end up crippling the industry. It's already challenging enough. But the second part of the bill talks about people putting charging at home, the next section at home. Well, the vast majority of electric vehicle charging happens at home, and by definition, when you're charging at home, you're buying it directly from the utility. And I will tell you from personal experience that my utility has gotten very innovative in how they do it. They charge me a flat fee every month. One flat fee, it's all you can eat charging. I like all you can eat in general, that includes the charging. But I can only charge the car when other people aren't using power. So they've used this model to be creative, to push us outside that 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. time when people are doing all of their other things at home. This is going to be the way of the future. These cars are going to become more and more popular over time, particularly as they become less expensive. And so we can't set ourselves up in order to cripple an industry, which I think is coming down the road, and for the record, generally is run by American companies as well. So I think we need to keep that in mind as we move down the road. So for that reason, I'm going to vote no on the bill today. It's these two sections. The rest of the bill may be perfectly fine, and I'm going to hope that Chair Payne will fix these issues as the bill moves down the road.
Is there any further debate? Members, is there any further debate? Seeing no further debate, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Chair. Just a couple of closing comments. Certainly we'll work with you, Representative Fine, to make sure we get a better understanding on that we're not trying to limit electric utilities from actually allowing people who charge cars. But we have a difference in opinion on where EVs will be in the future. I'm concerned about us mining resources in China and enriching other countries to put batteries in EV cars. I can push back on renewable energy standards when I can say that from 2010 to 2019, the U.S. spent $70 billion and only moved the needle just 2 or 3% over a climate change initiative and ideology that is unfitting for our country. I will also say that the fact that someone said renewable energies is an efficient, more productive way to move our country forward. Look, our country would not be where it is today if it weren't for fossil fuels. Fossil fuels have enriched our country where folks now have much more efficient opportunities to put food on the table. We have enriched opportunities for medicine, hospitals, save lives around the world. If you were to ask anyone 300 years ago that happened to be here, if they could go through a time warp, they would say, my gosh, the world's much cleaner, the air is purer, the water's cleaner, it's a greener planet than it was when we were burning fires for fuel and warmth 300 years ago. So those statements I can certainly refute, but we'll continue to work on the bill. It's a very difficult bill to land all these pieces, some of which we will take out, but appreciate your comments and we'll continue to work on it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Payne. Having closed on this bill, we'll now proceed to vote. Cheryl, will you please call the roll?
Chair Leak?
Yes.
Vice Chair McClure?
Yes.
Committee Whip Mooney?
Yes.
Ranking Member Driscoll?
No.
Representative Altman?
Yes.
Andrade?
Yes.
Bale?
Yes.
Benjamin? Brannon?
Yes.
Posada Cabrera?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Daley?
No.
Fine?
No.
Garrison? Gottlieb?
No.
Grant?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Hunchowski?
Yes.
Masullo?
Yes.
Payne?
Yes.
Perez? Rommel? Sosman?
Wow.
Sosman?
Yes.
Schoaf?
Yes.
Silvers?
No.
Skidmore?
No.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Thank you. By your vote, the bill passes. Please show committee substitute for House Bill 1645. Reported favorably. Next up, we will take committee substitute for House Bill 1329. Representative Redondo, you recognize?
Thank you, Chair League. Thank you, members, for the opportunity to present this bill. HB 1329, as the name implies, deals with veterans, and we are now the third largest state in our country. We happen to have the third largest veteran population as well. It counts for about almost 8% of our overall population here in the state of Florida. And the purpose of HB 1329 is to expand the opportunities and services that we provide to veterans and their spouses for the first time in our state. The bill does a lot. I'll try and keep it brief. What it does is Florida is for Veterans, Inc., which is what we refer to as Veterans Florida. It's going to expand employment outreach, marketing, and support services for Veterans Florida, and also provide guidance to allow Veterans Florida to link veterans and their spouses with existing opportunities that may exist in the business world. It clarifies the focus of our Veterans Employment and Training Services Program to link veterans and their spouses with additional opportunities, allows an educational stipend for veterans while attending the University of Florida Institute of Food and Agricultural Services Sciences programming within the state, authorizes Veterans Florida to assist state agencies with recruiting veterans and spouses, allows businesses participating in Veterans Florida's grants programs to apply for other state programs, waives certain filing fees with the Department of State for certain business filings for our veterans, waives hunting and fishing license fees for honorably discharged veterans with a service-related disability of 50% or higher, and also creates a division within the existing Advisory Council on Brain and Spinal Cord Injuries to include two veterans who suffered brain or spinal cord injuries to serve on that committee. And finally, include some additional instruction for middle and high school students on the importance of Veterans Day and Memorial Day. And Mr. Chair, that is the bill.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions of the sponsor? Any questions of the sponsor? Seeing no questions of the sponsor, there are no amendments. We'll now move into public testimony. Joe Marino, Veterans Florida, waves in support. Barney Bishop, waves in support. Seeing no further public testimony, is there debate? Representative Salzman, in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just really excited. I just found out that I'm going to get a free hunting and fishing license, so thank you.
It's all about you. Is there any further debate? Any further debate? Seeing no further debate, Representative Redondo, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate everyone's support, and it's a great bill. I don't have the privilege of calling myself a veteran, so thank you for all the veterans who served both on this committee and in our state, and I ask for your favorable support.
Thank you. Cheryl, will you please call the roll?
Chair Leak?
Yes.
Vice Chair McClure?
Yes.
Committee Whip Mooney?
Yes.
Ranking Member Driscoll?
Yes.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Andrade?
Yes.
Bale?
Yes.
Benjamin? Brannon?
Yes.
Posada Cabrera?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Daley?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Garrison? Gottlieb?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Hunchowski?
Yes.
Masullo? Payne?
Yes.
Perez? Rommel?
Yes.
Sosman?
Hua.
Sosman? Schoaf?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Thank you. By your vote, the bill passes. Please show committee substitute for House Bill 1329 reported favorably. Representative Redondo, if you'd stick around a minute, I'd like to talk to you.
Yes, sir.
Representative McClure?
Hey there, Chair.
Moves that we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.